My name is Steve Gould. I'm a professional drummer and an amateur thinker. My favorite part of life is learning, which is great because there's so much to learn. That's what this show is for. Thinking out loud, discussing ideas, sharing conversation, listening, growing, and hopefully learning something.
The Steve Gould Show.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Whatever time of day it is that you're listening to this, thanks for listening. Good day to you. It's me, Steve, still making podcasts. This is number 13, episode 13. I'm going to start things off the way I usually do with recounting a new experience. This is more of a recent experience. Honestly, the category of new experiences only, I don't have that many new experiences to share about them every week. Or if the experience is new, it's just kind of a mundane experience that isn't worth sharing. This particular experience is something that's happened to me before, but I navigated it in a new way. Here's what happened. I was driving from Phoenix to Los Angeles yesterday afternoon. That's what I do every Sunday these days. Just do a turn and burn trip to Phoenix over the weekend, Saturday morning, drive there, lead the rehearsals, and play the services as a drummer and a music director at the church. And then Sunday morning, play the services, and then drive back to Los Angeles. And I pull into this gas station in Blythe, California, the city right on the border. And it is so packed. It's so crowded. All the cars are waiting for available spots at the pump. And I was kind of in a hurry. I mean, I'm usually in a hurry when I'm on a road trip. I don't want to just like sit around in a gas station wasting time that I could be on the road. And I remembered that there are a few pumps that are kind of off the beaten path from where all the rest of the pumps at the gas station are, at this particular gas station. This is a place that I've stopped at many times in the past. So I drove around to where those other pumps are, and sure enough, one of them was open. No joke, there are at least a dozen cars waiting for available pumps to appear, and I just drove right up to an open pump. Why? How did that happen? Well, these pumps look different than the others. They're just like solo shots and they don't have an overhead awning. And so I think the psychological quick glance analysis process that the average person would be employing when you pull into a gas station and you look, are there any available pumps? You're not necessarily looking across the entire property of the gas station. You're just kind of looking where you think pumps might be. I think this the same thing happens, I've heard, with social media, just kind of like a selective blindness. That section of your Facebook homepage, like your newsfeed, that section of your newsfeed that's always advertisements, like the left-hand side or whatever. It's like you just eventually learn to never look there, like never. You're basically blind to that section of your screen because you've trained yourself to not look that direction. I think that's what happened yesterday with all these folks who are waiting for a pump. Meanwhile, there are available pumps over to the side. So I just drove over straight to one of those open ones, filled up my car, was feeling pretty good about not having to wait. A couple of people saw me do that and drove over and started filling their car up. And then when I was done pumping, I went to go park so I could go inside and use the bathroom and maybe get some chips. In instances like that, I want to, you know, make a pump available for somebody who's waiting in line. So I wanted to park the car in a parking spot, except all the parking spots were full too. I mean, this gas station was packed. I don't know what was going on yesterday, but everybody was on the road. So instead of parking in a parking spot, I just parked against the curb on the side and put my flashers on just so I could get out of the way of someone who wanted to use the pump, but also not wait for like a parking spot to open up. And it occurred to me when I was walking in that, again, there's a conventional norm. I'm just kind of pre-programmed into thinking that a parking spot is the place where I can leave my car. I mean, I can actually leave my car wherever I want to, even just in the middle of the road. I mean, at that point, it would be in a lot of people's way, so I'm going to try to leave my car off to the side somewhere where it's not in anyone's way, and then put the flashers on so everybody knows I'm just there momentarily. Here's the point. It occurred to me as I was walking in to the gas station that I was getting away with something. Or I had the sensation, maybe, that I was getting away with something. Like I skipped in line somehow. I don't think that's true because I went to an available pump. I just went to one that people weren't looking for. And I parked my car in an available physical space where I could leave my car. It just wasn't an actual parking spot. And obviously, I don't advise doing that on the streets of LA, on sections of the street that are painted red and signs that say you can't park here. But there was nothing like that going on at the gas station. And so I'm walking into the gas station, and having had a much more efficient, speedy experience than these other cars who were waiting. And I have the feeling that I'm getting away with something. And I'm not. I just, what did I do? What did I do different than the other patrons? I was trying to not, like, I was thinking about this and trying to not just congratulate myself. If I were to sum it up, it was that I looked outside the conventional lines, looked outside the box of thinking that the usual systems create in all of us. And that got me thinking about a conversation I had with a friend just recently about his time in Bangladesh, similarities between his experience over there and my experience in Thailand. When I first went to Thailand, when I was like 23 years old, my first time in Asia, just noticing how nobody uses the lines on the roads there, like the traffic lines. This road in the middle of Bangkok, where I was in Thailand, is painted for four lanes of traffic, and there's for sure seven lanes of traffic, not four, because no one pays any attention to the lines on the road. And I think as a result, a lot more cars move through that city with a lot more efficiency than would happen if they paid attention to the lines. And this brings up an idea of societal systems that I've been thinking about for a few years now. Behavioral norms, social patterning, and even intentional government social systems that are put in place to create order and efficiency. These systems often succeed in creating order and efficiency in areas that would otherwise be chaotic, and I want to grant that. But I wonder if these systems don't also create a pretty problematic blindness in all of us toward the real situations that we're in. The actual reality that we're experiencing, we've become blind to because we've narrowed the parameters of that reality in order to fit inside the system that we've grown accustomed to. There's an idea that we all have about how things are going to work, and that idea is programmed into us via societal training. And much of those ideas are the result of effective, meaningful, helpful systems. Don't park your car in the middle of the pavement. Park your car in a spot that helps your car to be out of everyone else's way. Speed limits and traffic lights would be another example of this. A few months ago in Phoenix, I was in a southern suburb rolling up to rehearsal first thing in the morning on a Sunday morning. Very early call time for this rehearsal. I'm sitting at a red light. It's 5 a.m. There's no other cars around anywhere. And this light has been red for 3 minutes straight. And the light, I could see the light for the perpendicular traffic is still green. It's not even turning yellow. And there's a crosswalk. And the crosswalk is go for the people that would cross in front of my car. It's not even counting down red. Like, I've got no indication that this light that I'm sitting at, which is red, is ever going to change. And so I just drove through it. And there's that little part of me that freaks out. It's like, you're breaking the law. Like, no, this is a societal system that is used to manage a bunch of cross traffic at an intersection. And there's no cross traffic right now. So I just run the red light. Which is to say, the reality of the situation is me sitting by myself at an intersection at 5 a.m. But my training into the system of traffic lights, which are usually really helpful when there's a lot of busy traffic and everybody has to take turns on when to go, my training is so deep that when I run the red light by myself at 5 a.m, I just have this, like, all the hairs are standing up and I have this really intense recoil inside of me psychologically. That's kind of how I felt when I pulled up to an available pump when everybody else was waiting. And when I parked my car next to the curb to go into the gas station bathroom, even though it wasn't an actual spot, like I said, my conversation with my friend Tim about, you know, traffic patterns in Asia, those folks aren't bothered. They've just learned as a society to ignore the traffic lanes because they're just inefficient. It's like we have too many cars on our roads to pay attention to these traffic lanes. I don't know what to think about that. I, for one, value the systems in society that create efficiency and order, And yet I'm the first one to throw that system away if it's creating a problem for the real situation. It's almost as if, in order to succeed, the use of a system must be accompanied by critical thinking. Like, I can't just give my mind over to the system and trust that the system will work perfectly. There are lots of moments where the system works well, and then there are all these moments where the system doesn't work well, and I need to be able to see the difference. It requires some thought. It requires some effort on my part, some cognitive intention. The instinct to set it and forget it is well documented in our species. Human beings are very prone to thinking about things in a binary, black and white way. It's just an easier way to deal with data. I just don't know if it's a helpful way to deal with data. The systems we have allow us to move through the world without critical thinking, but I don't think life works very well without critical thinking. So I'm revisiting that idea today after yesterday's experience at the gas station, reminded that I have to move through my tasks in life, utilizing the way the systems help me and also watching for the moments where the systems aren't helpful, watching where my training and my social patterning isn't bringing anything to the table and I need to reject it and think outside the box. That's what that means, right? That phrase, think outside the box, think outside the lines. What's the box? What are the lines? They're just social systems. Usually they're helpful, but sometimes they're not. All right, so I've mentioned this before briefly, but the evolution of the Steve Gould Show was basically the pandemic, coronavirus, everybody's got more free time than usual, and I was doing a thing called Playlist Friday on Instagram. I spend a lot of time making playlists, and Playlist Friday was me just talking about a playlist that I had made and sharing what went into the creation of the playlist, why I did it, and what I was thinking as I did so, and then sharing a link to the playlist. And then the pandemic hit, and so I started Storytime Tuesday. Like, I was using IGTV to post these videos of me talking. I would record some of them in my car, some of them in my apartment, and this is, you know, I'm using my AirPods to record this and my phone, nothing professional. 7 minutes long, maybe 10 minutes long, something like that. Stories about my life and things that I learned from it. I was doing GoPro Monday also. GoPro Monday features footage of me on a gig, sitting at the drum set performing. Q&A Thursday is me answering questions, which I've mentioned on this show before. And then Storytime Tuesday was me talking for a long time about an idea, which is where this whole thing is now. Like, here I am on a podcast. This is just extended versions of Storytime Tuesday. So I've since taken all of those videos down off of my Instagram, and I'm going to recycle them here, the ones that really stood out both to me and to people who followed my Instagram. I'm going to post a few extra ones on my Patreon page, which, for the people who support me already on Patreon, thank you so much. If you're listening to the show and you don't support me there, thank you for listening to the show. You can help the Steve Gould Show be a better thing by just listening and subscribing and maybe even telling your friends. But if you really want to help this podcast continue and have any sort of long life to it, supporting me on Patreon is a wonderful gift to me. So if you consider doing that, that'd be great. I've got a bunch of bonus content on there, including extra Storytime Tuesday videos, the actual footage that I posted on Instagram. But you don't have to go to my Patreon to hear this story I'm about to share with you. This is the audio from the actual Storytime Tuesday video that I posted a year ago, describing when I met the legendary Tom Hanks. Like I said, it's the audio from that Storytime Tuesday post, which I made with my AirPods, and you'll hear me kind of moving around in the room. I talk with my hands a lot, which is actually really difficult in the voiceover world, because I have to remain more still. Like right now, as I'm sitting here in my house talking, I wish I could be moving around in the chair more, but it makes a bunch of noise when I do that. So you'll hear some of that noise in this story. But I'm sharing the story anyway because I'm really proud of it. And there's more stories like this on the Patreon. Welcome to Storytime Tuesday. Hi, it's me, Steve, and it's Tuesday, so here is a story. coolest celebrity exchange that I ever had was with the legendary Tom Hanks. I'm not kidding. I hung out with Tom Hanks for like an hour and a half. Here's the situation. This is like early 2014, maybe February or March. Had a gig in New York with Sarah Bareilles at Lincoln Center. We were playing for an event called the Red Dress Awards. The red dress symbolizes women's heart health, and the awards ceremony is basically like a three-hour-long black tie event where speakers and presenters share advancements and progress in the field of women's heart health, or maybe you know, survivors sharing their story and inspiration and whatnot. And at the end of the event, Sarah played like five songs. So basically, we were the entertainment to close out what was a pretty long sit down for the audience listening to various speakers, all of which, you know, was all compelling speakers. Hillary Clinton was one of the speakers, and that woman, television personality Hoda from the Today Show, and a number of others, including Rita Wilson, Tom Hanks's wife. And I didn't get to listen to any of them speak because as the band, we just needed to stay in the back area in the in our dressing room. The seated area, it wasn't super large, maybe 500 people that can fit in a Lincoln Center room. And it was all like important folks, like former President Bill Clinton was there. And well, Tom Hanks seated with his wife, Rita Wilson. And here now it's time for us to play. I'm on stage with Sarah. Had to play pretty quiet. It was a really intimate setting. We played a couple of ballads. One, we played Sarah's song Manhattan. And Lincoln Center has a open like a window section behind the stage that looks out on Central Park and all of Manhattan, and it was just a really, it was a cool moment as a performer. I'll never forget that experience. Anyway, at a number of points during our performance, Sarah was particularly funny in her between song banter. She's always very funny and witty, and this particular night she was very funny and witty, and Tom Hanks laughed or something, and Sarah said, you know, like, OMG, can't believe I made Tom Hanks laugh. And he said something back to her, which, she, you know, we could all hear. I don't remember what it was, but they kind of had a little bit of a back and forth between the two of them. And then we, you know, we finished our set. After we were done playing, we go back to our dressing rooms. And in Lincoln Center, the dressing rooms aren't super large, or the ones we were occupying weren't large. So Sarah had a separate room from the others, other band members. And apparently her room was right next to Rita Wilson's room. Rita, as one of the featured presenters, had her own dressing room. And so when the event is over, Tom and Rita come marching back, straight back to Rita's dressing room, except instead of going into Rita's dressing room, Tom knocks on Sarah's door. And according to her, you know, the story, she answers and he's like, hey, just want to introduce myself. I'm Tom Hanks. I really loved your music. I've heard of you before, but admittedly, I've never listened to your stuff. It was just phenomenal. Are you free to go out and have a drink? And can Chris and Steve and Rich come too? And, you know, we don't know this is happening. We're in our corner of the dressing room. And Sarah texts us and is like, you guys, Tom Hanks knows all of your names and he wants to take us out for a drink right now. Like, holy cow. Okay. So we end up like arranging this with our tour manager. We're going to meet Tom and Rita at the Mandarin Hotel lobby bar, which is like kind of around the corner. So we get up there, me and Chris and Rich and Sarah and our tour manager. We're sitting there kind of like waiting for Tom and Rita to arrive. I'm looking across the lobby at the elevator section and I see the elevators open and Tom and Rita get out and they walk over to the host and I see them chatting. And then the host and Tom and Rita all kind of look, like the host points towards us. Tom and Rita look this direction. And I like instinctively, because we were waiting for them, I instinctively like raised my hand. And Tom Hanks sees my, he's like, oh, he like points at me. And then they start walking over. And I was like, oh my gosh, I just hailed Tom Hanks. And they come walking up and we're seated in kind of like a half circle. And Sarah and the tour manager on this side and the band, we're all on this side and I'm on the other end. And as they come walking up, Rita splits off and walks towards Sarah to greet her. And Tom walks straight towards me. And he comes walking towards me with his hand out. He's like, Steve, I really enjoyed that performance. You're such a fantastic drummer. It's great to meet you. I'm not kidding. This happened. I mean, I'm absolutely starstruck. The most interesting part about it was that I recognized his voice. You know, like a lot of celebrities, I mean, if they're popular for being in the sports world, you maybe haven't heard him talk very much. Or if they're popular in the music world, even, you maybe haven't heard him talk very much because they've only sung or played their instrument. It's like, I've heard Tom Hanks talk a lot. I've seen a lot of movies that he's starred in. I've listened to hours of this man's voice. And here, this recognizable voice is addressing me in person. And it's like, I know him. It feels like I know him. And in addition to me recognizing his voice, his demeanor and his attitude and his posture toward me was so kind, like a level playing field. He was treating me like I was just another person. He's a person and I'm a person. And now we're two people having a conversation. And that's how the whole hang went. We sat there having drinks. We had already ordered, and it came around to Tom, and the bartender's like, what do you want? And he's like, I don't know. Steve, what are you having? And I was like, oh, it's a Downey 15, which is a single malt scotch. And he's like, what's that? I was like, oh, would have taken you as a scotch guy. And he goes, I'm not a scotch guy. Like, it's a single malt. And he's like, oh, I don't even know. Can I try it? Like, I mean, this is obviously pre-coronavirus. I'm like, yeah, sure. He tastes it. He's like, oh, it's really strong. I mean, I don't know if he was just like playing me, but it really seemed like, and Rita leans in, she's like, he'll have a Stella. And Tom's like, yeah, I should probably stick with something lighter than that. And then he's like asking us about the music industry. The bass player in that band and I were both from Minneapolis. We're sharing how we've known each other for years, and he's asking about the music scene in Minneapolis and what was it like for Chris when he moved to New York, and what's it like for me since at the time I still lived in Minneapolis, and how long have we played with Sarah, and he's sharing how much he loves music and history. And it was just almost effortless to hang with him. People asked me afterwards, like, did you get a selfie with him? And I didn't, because it really did not seem appropriate. The kind of environment that he was crafting for us as a group, and I say that he was crafting the environment, and everybody was crafting the environment, but Tom Hanks being the kind of like juggernaut celebrity figure in that moment, he's at the top of the food chain of the social hierarchy for that group of people, and so he's kind of establishing what the tone is going to be like. And I'm saying that only as someone who's been around a handful of celebrities over the course of my music career and watching how the most famous person in the room is going to set the tone for how the room feels. And it was impressive to me how comfortable the vibe was, how intentional Tom was to make everyone feel like they mattered and like they belonged. I forgot that he was the Tom Hanks. He just was like this new guy that we met, and someone who was enjoyable to have a conversation with, someone who seemed to enjoy participating in a conversation with me and with the rest of the group. It was really something. And I guess I'm bringing that up because it taught me a lot. I've had a couple of other interactions where the celebrity made me feel small, unimportant. The celebrity in the room made everyone feel like they didn't matter. Okay, that's an option. That's an option for how to treat other people. Take a quick assessment of the status that each person in the room occupies, according to whatever metric you want to use to determine status. Take a quick assessment and then treat everyone who's lower than you as if they're lower than you. That's something that you can do as a person. That's something I can do. And it's certainly something that I've seen done. Maybe culture at large models this for us as the predominant method. Maybe this is how we all are supposed to treat each other according to learned behavior of society. And then here comes someone as high up in the food chain as Tom Hanks, and he's like, no, I'm going to treat you kindly. Rita was the same way. So kind. So inspiring to speak with. But zero condescension. And I've never forgotten it. It's something that I think about in almost every interaction that I'm in. Here's a question for the viewership here. Do you find yourself assessing the status level of the people that you're in a room with? I do. I've done it ever since I was little. Ever since the social hierarchy at school emerged. It's like, oh, those are the cool kids. Those are the nerds or the losers. That's the bad lunch table. Don't sit at that lunch table. It's drilled into me from a young age to determine the value of people based on their status in the society that I'm in, like my community circle. I guess I'm just confessing. I often find myself making this assessment and then treating people accordingly. And now here I have a prominent example of not doing that. That's my takeaway from that interaction. I want to share the story of meeting Tom Hanks because I love telling people how cool he was. It makes me feel cool that I got to hang out with him, whatever. There's a few other important people that I got to hang out with in various circles, and nobody made me feel as valued as Tom Hanks made me feel. I have no real value in his world. So here's a guy defying the thing that we're all taught from a young age, which is to determine status and treat people based on that status. And instead, he just treats everybody as if they matter. Seemingly, according to my experience, that's, you know, he actually has that reputation from other folks that I've talked to that have spent time with him. Tom Hanks is a genuinely nice guy. Somehow, rising above the base level instinct to treat other people according to their status and try to emerge as better than others. Storytime Tuesday. By the time I stopped posting in the Storytime Tuesday series, I had 12 or 13 episodes. 12 or 13 different descriptions of things that have happened to me, and then I take some time to talk about how that event impacted me. Meeting Tom Hanks really impacted me. Like I mentioned in the story, I've met a few celebrities at this point, maybe a couple of dozen. My experience meeting Tom Hanks stands out as a complete anomaly. Really a genuinely wonderful man. I may or may not share additional Storytime Tuesday episodes in the future. Like I said, I took them all off of my Instagram now, and I'm going to be posting them on the Patreon. So please head over to patreon.com/Steve Gould if you want to hear more stories like that. Music in this episode is another Minneapolis band called Duffel, D-U-F-F-E-L. Their only recording is a 5-song EP called Essential Duffel, and these guys are just making relaxed, low-key, instrumental funk music. The drummer is a good friend of mine and coincidentally a former student. His name's Mark Schwant, and he and his two brothers, Mike and Matt, own what I consider to be the best microbrewery in the Twin Cities area. It's called Bauhaus Brew Labs, B-A-U-H-A-U-S. So if you're ever in Minneapolis and you want some good beer, head to Bauhaus. Their Pilsner, called Wonder Stuff, is one of my favorite beers, period, on the planet. They are not paying me to say this. This is not an advertisement. I just love that brewery. Their tap room is gorgeous. It's a great hang. You're going to love it. Thanks for listening to another episode of The Steve Gould Show. I'll see you next time.
The Steve Gould Show.